Hello, everyone, and welcome to Thrifters Villa, a podcast for resellers and entrepreneurs. I'm Daniela.
And I'm Lori, and today we have the pleasure of speaking to Sam and Misty from West Coast Goods.
So Sam and Misty
Sam and Misty are
a reselling couple who sell on eBay, Amazon, and have an eBay and Amazon mentor group.
We're so excited to get to know this powerful team and introduce them to our audience.
So join us at the table, friends, and let's get to it.
So welcome, Sam and Misty. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having us.
It's very nice to have you guys on here. So Lori and I have looked you guys up and done some research, but our friends who are listening may not know who you are. So this is your time to take the stage, introduce yourselves, how you got into reselling, what was your story before reselling, and just kind of share that backstory.
Sure. So we started reselling. We never resold part-time. We just jumped in full-time resellers, and that was 14 years ago. So we just, we met, we were working together at a mortgage firm, and we both stopped working there. And then we met after the fact, but we got into reselling. Somebody gave us a BlackBerry. So this is before all the smartphones. It was a BlackBerry
7130, like the old school black and white cell phones.
Yes. Yeah.
So BlackBerries were big.
Yes.
Yeah. Huge. Those and the Trio.
The Palms.
Yeah. The Palms. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. That, we're that old.
I mean, I wanted a BlackBerry so bad when I was in college. It was like, I saved up to, I had a BlackBerry and I had a Sidekick because yes. I wanted to text on my Sidekick and I couldn't do that on my BlackBerry because that was extra money.
You were the coolest person with a Sidekick.
Yes. Right? I had two phones.
anyways, we ended up, I couldn't get used to using the phone. I hated it. So I put it on eBay and we made like $50 in 24 hours. And I was like, wow, we might be on to something. And like she said, you know, we were doing mortgages and this was in like 2005 to 2007, right when the market was crashing. So we kind of knew that, you know, life in mortgage isn't going to last much longer.
Yeah.
So I kind of, you know, asked her if we can invest some money into buying some cell phones and giving it a try. We doubled our money, quit our job. I had a big commission check come in, invested all in cell phones, and we did cell phones for a good five.
It was a long time. Yeah, it was 5 to 7 years. We did strictly cell phones. We would custom build cell phones. We would deliver. We lived in San Diego. I don't know if you're familiar with San Diego County, but it is huge. And so a lot of our customers wanted to purchase the phones, but they didn't want to commute. So I would charge $5 delivery. And I'm sorry if you can hear puppies in the background. I am
okay. We love animals on this podcast. So
we'll definitely see one of our animals.
Yeah, at some point in time.
So we would deliver anywhere between 10 to 15 cell phones a day all over San Diego County. And then the iPhone became very popular and kind of,
The iPhone and the Galaxies came out, it kind of eliminated all competition. There was no more LG. Yeah. There was no more Katana. So that kind of like really hurt the market for us. So we kind of had to shift our focus into just something else. So is that before
that's,
we moved to?
That's when we looked into eBay and we got into garage sales and
sneakers.
Yes. Sam is
so I have a question, not to interrupt. So how were you selling the phones before you? So you weren't on eBay selling the phones or you were?
No, we were. Thank you for clarifying that. We were doing Craigslist.
Okay.
Craigslist was selling a majority. We were still on eBay, but nothing like we were moving locally.
Yes. Craigslist, Recycler.
Oh, yeah.
Whoops. Penny Saver.
Yes.
The funny thing with cell phones, when someone breaks their phone, they want it, you know, they need it within a day or two. So eBay wasn't really it. And that's why, you know, locally, like we killed it. You break your phone, you needed something there. And back then.
And we did swap meet. So I would go to the Kobe swap meet and I had a space down there in San Diego, Friday and Saturdays. and sell there. And those were huge.
Can you explain what that is for people that might not know what that is?
Swap meet, or they call it flea market.
Flea markets in the East Coast.
Yeah, it's like flea market.
East Coast girls. Swap meets on the West Coast. Rod sale, yard sale, you know.
Yeah.
Tomato.
I've never heard that term before.
Yeah,
we have this debate like all the time with people, like when they hear us say it or we hear flea market, because flea market doesn't make sense. Someone in Cali, like no one knows what that is.
Yeah.
When you said swap meet, I thought you like met at a spot and you were swapping. Right. That's how I interpret. I'm glad you clarified.
Yes, I'm glad you asked.
Yeah, and here's another question. Where were you sourcing your phones? Where are you getting your phones?
Buying mostly off of eBay, buying broken phones and repairing them.
We repaired the phones and then we would change the whole housing. I don't know if you know what BlackBerries used to look like, but they had that plastic casing. So we would buy them from China, all different colors. We would customize them, you know, the color of the phone, change the color of the keys. So they were huge. BlackBerries.
I was going to say, you were the type of people that I go looking for in the flea market to customize my phone.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. To match your shoes. Right.
Yeah. And you were just like learning as you went, like you just figured it out. Did you watch like YouTube videos to figure out how to customize? Like, how did you learn how to fix these phones?
I customized one for myself and I was getting so many compliments that we thought, you know, let's just try putting them up for sale. And then they took off, especially when people could have, you know, their favorite teams on the back, whether it's the Dodgers or Angels,
gold and purple for Lakers. People love that.
When you think about the market then too, it's so different than what electronics is now, right? But in that time frame, like 2005 to 2010, I mean, that was what everyone wanted. You wanted your phone customized, you wanted to be personalized, that was like the cool thing to do. And then iPhone, like you said, completely changed everything.
It changed everything.
Phones were becoming popular at that time, you know, when everyone had the Razr flip phone. Yes. You know,
everyone wanted that.
Mm-hmm. So then we would do, we got into garage sales and sold a lot of items on eBay through garage sales.
Then we kind of started looking at just some YouTube videos and seeing a lot of people being real successful in sneakers. We got into sneakers and we found out from a YouTube channel that in Oregon, Nike, where the Nike and Adidas headquarters are, they would donate their sample shoes to the Goodwills daily out there.
Oh, wow.
So we left California, took a trip out there for a week just to see if it was real. And the stuff that we stumbled upon was just amazing. I mean, there were just $15, $20 buys for, you know, sample shoes that people can't get. So we were selling $300, $400, $500, $600.
Wow.
So we decided to make the move out there, kind of stack up some real money. And we did it for a good couple of years, nothing but exclusive sneakers from Goodwill in Oregon.
Wow.
That's great.
So they were Nike samples. So, you know, they're one of a kind. No one has another pair of them. And they're in like new condition.
Yeah, majority of them are new or just barely tried on. And with samples, I mean, they're just so in demand. And they were just everywhere. We would travel all day just buying.
I'm sorry. What was your competition like in Oregon? Like, were there other people in the game at that time?
I don't think so. I don't think anyone really, really knew. And, you know, most people, like when you talk thrifters, they're just in there. Most of them are, you know, women in the women's section or men's in the men's clothing. Sneakers weren't too big back then. There wasn't a buzz like, you know, everyone's a sneakerhead now. Everyone sells sneakers. Right. But then there was really no market for it.
And you guys were really ahead of the curve.
Yeah, they were just scared to invest, you know, $25, $35, $40 in a pair of shoes that they know nothing about. Most of them didn't know how to look up sneakers to know what they were, when we knew exactly, you know, what they were.
And then, we're continuously learning. So we were watching YouTube videos and we saw people, they buy from TJ Maxx and Marshalls, and they're able to resell from TJ Maxx, Marshalls, Ross, Burlington, and you're able to make a profit from those new shoes, reselling them on eBay. And then that's when we stumbled across that we are ungated in Nike and Under Armour on Amazon. And so
can you explain that whole gated, ungated thing? Because that's a new term to me.
So when someone opens up a new Amazon account, they cannot just sell big brands. They are restricted, which is what gated means, to sell these brands, such as Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, just, you know, a majority of the big brands. But since our account was an older account, they grandfathered it in, and just the original accounts could almost sell anything.
Wow.
So we had a market open to us, because most people that were already sourcing in our area in Marshall's, TJ Maxx, and, you know, these type stores couldn't sell this stuff on Amazon. So a lot of it was getting left behind, and we had the ability to be able to sell it on Amazon.
That's amazing that the opportunity was just there for you. I mean, you didn't have to worry. You could just do it. And that obviously sprung you forward to your success that you have now.
I think in everything that we've done, it's just kind of just been an accident that kind of fell into our lives.
Yeah. It's just forming, right?
Yeah, and everything was really planned.
We didn't plan any of this. I swear it just keeps falling in our lap, and just opportunities. And then we're learning from each opportunity that comes in front of us. It's grateful.
Pretty amazing.
It sounds like your timing was pretty amazing for both of those ventures, you know, with the Blackberries and with the sneakers, but you also went for it. Like if you got a lead in Oregon and then you did it, like you guys went out there and you made it happen. So I always think that timing is super important, but taking advantage of an opportunity is as well. And you guys seem to capitalize on that.
I agree that I have to give all the credit to Sam. He builds this in his mind, and I just, you know, I'm his wife. I have to believe in him, and it works out for us. So
I don't like to fail.
And if it doesn't work out, we find a way for it to work out. So there's lots of opportunity out there. And I mean, we've had our downfalls, plenty of them. We've lost thousands of dollars, but you know, you learn from that and you become a better reseller by accomplishing and getting over those hurdles.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Did you guys ever envision this, like where you are right now? So you guys are very accomplished as a reselling couple, and you are now on Amazon, you're on eBay, and you have this mentorship that you offer to people to help them grow their eBay and Amazon businesses. Did you ever picture yourselves being here?
No,
not at all. Or just the way that our social media has kind of like snowballed, and we didn't understand really how important that presence is, but we would be out with our kids in, you know, Venice Beach, and we would have people come up to us and they knew who we are. Like, that is just like, that blows my mind. And our kids are looking at us like they just came up and are like, are you West Coast Goods and West Coast Gems? And we're like, what is this? Like, what kind of world is this? And our kids are just like sitting there looking at us shocked, you know? But that's when we realized like we have a platform and an opportunity to help others, you know, do this same thing at home. I mean, these mothers that are working from or trying to work and raise their kids, like this gives them the opportunity to work from home, raise their children. They don't have to be away from them all day. It's just crazy. Reselling is amazing. And that platform that, you know, that it gives us to the freedom, the time freedom is.
Yeah.
What I feel blessed every
day. Your own schedule, and I'm definitely envious that you guys are a couple in this, because you know it can be a lonely job sometimes, which is why social media is also nice, or I connect with people through YouTube or podcast or whatever. But whenever I see like a couple who's in it together, and I think how they can like divide and conquer and also bounce ideas off of each other and propel each other forward, it's exciting for me to see this and then to see the next generation coming through. So tell us about your family dynamic and how you've included your children, how many kids you have. Like, this part is fascinating to me as well.
Sure. We have two kids still at home. One moved out, grown up. Mm-hmm. Our youngest is 13 now, and my son's still at home. He's turning 18 in a couple months.
Wow.
But we've
and they like, help you guys, right, with the business?
We've always included them. We let them invest. We teach them, you know, the taxes portion mm-hmm. of it. When they do invest, like they have to pay for their shipping. They need to learn every aspect of it. And not at just first we were part. Doing it just for an extra pair of hands, right? But they're getting interested in it. And
it's really our responsibility as parents to teach the kids how money works, the true way money works, not what we're taught in schools.
Correct.
Not the, you know, normal college 9 to 5. I mean, that's just not for everyone. It's not working for a lot of people now. They don't teach people how to make money work for you. And I mean, coming from a Middle Eastern background is really instilled in me. And I feel, you know, we have to instill it into our children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can relate to you on that. So I'm first generation Italian American. My family came off the boat. So my dad came here when he was in his mid-20s and my mom came here when she was younger. But my grandparents, my mom's parents, they had nothing when they came mm-hmm. here and they worked 3-4 jobs. They were hustlers. That's what they did. Yep. They saved money.
You had to.
Exactly. And they bought cars in cash and they bought houses in cash. And this is just what they did. And a lot of that is has transferred over to me and my sister as well. And the entrepreneurial side of me, yes, I work outside the home. I don't know if that'll be a forever thing for me. I don't know. As of right now, I still work outside the home, but I've always wanted to grow my own business. So getting into reselling, having the podcast, social media helping me out with that, starting YouTube, like all these different things are kind of coming together. And it's like, okay, I feel like I'm finding my purpose in it all and learning the money and just understanding all of that. I feel like when you come from an immigrant family, there's just different things that get instilled in you that you see firsthand.
Definitely.
It's just different, you know?
Yeah. It's really just hard to explain. And it's not even just saying things, you know, about American culture. It's just, I think it's different coming from a different culture.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. I absolutely agree. Money's looked at differently, right? Yeah. In various cultures. So, yeah, but the opportunity to even give your children, right, to possibly get into reselling and get into the family business. I mean, the opportunity mm-hmm. is there for them and they're already doing it. That's great.
Yeah, that's definitely. Awesome. I mean, my son's already, you know, flipping sneakers, flipping, you know, the Travis Scott releases and, you know, things like that. So, they're learning. Yeah. He makes his own money.
How does he get the Travis Scott stuff?
Yeah, right?
That's what I want to know.
we have bots in our group, so.
Ah.
Yeah. I got it. You got to be in the group to
I
know.
I have a few failed attempts for my 16-year-old son.
No, yeah, they're really difficult without bots. It's almost impossible. I mean, you'll get lucky once every 15, 30 tries, but it's difficult.
So, and how many, like if a sneaker, if like something drops, how many of one shoe do you typically acquire?
Depends on the release. I mean, if mm-hmm. something matches my purchase criteria and I see that it's consistently selling, and that's kind of what we focus on are, you know, items that are popular in demand. Mm-hmm. We mainly do sports apparel now from, you know, Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, men's, you know, joggers, sneakers, sports bras. So that's kind of what we focus on. But if something matches my purchase criteria and I see, you know, it's consistently selling, I don't mind going heavy into something. Mm-hmm. It just, the real, you know, what's going to help me make that decision is seeing how often it's selling.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like this is like a whole nother world, Lori, that we just don't tap into because we thrift clothing and we sell it. We do retail arbitrage and stuff as well, but it's like this whole world of sneakers and all of that, like, it's just, it's so foreign to me, but it's so fascinating to hear about it.
In all reality, I mean, it's just all the same. I mean, whether it's clothes or vintage items or, you know, new clothes, used clothes, it's pretty much all the same. I mean, if something's selling a lot, you know, you're going to buy a lot of. If you're just buying, you know, one little item, you hardly see it selling, you know, you can pick up one item. Mm-hmm. So you kind of just let the numbers tell you what you're doing.
Mm. Yeah, and once you identify what's in demand and, you know, if it matches up with something or you educate yourself on a certain thing. You know, I don't know very much about sneakers, but my youngest has a little bit of interest in it. So he is the one who, when I'm out thrifting, I will message Rocco and then he'll tell me to go to different websites and see what is the sneaker one?
The StockX one that people
StockX
do?
Or Goat.
Goat's the one that he has me look on. So but then again, like for somebody like me, I feel like the sneaker game is so huge right now. And there are so many people who just know what they're doing, but I don't even know that I would tap into that. Cause I don't know if I have like the ambition for sneakers. I don't know.
You have to have a little passion for.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree. Just like with vintage, you have to mm-hmm. love that, the history of fashion and all that. And
the history of it, have the eye for it, and really enjoy it, to be able to appreciate it.
Yeah,
I think that having some passion for any of it makes your job that much easier. Yeah. It makes you that much better at what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And it helps you progress, too. It just helps the business keep going.
Are you passionate about sneakers as well? Or do you have like something that is your niche or something you like to...
I love sports apparel. That's what I wear, but also beauty. Beauty is it's a huge seller, and I love beauty products. So yes, that it does very well for us as well. So and then it doesn't take up as much space as opposed to Sam's sneakers. Yeah. We have a 3-car garage that we converted to a warehouse, and just the sneakers take up so much room. It kind of limits
us. To store. Oh, but there's such a good return on investment. Anytime I find anything that doesn't take up a lot of space in my inventory, I'm so excited.
Yes, so true. And some beauty products, you know, they can be upwards of $100. So there's a lot of return in that as well.
Funny you say that, because that's something I want to venture in this year, is I want to buy some type of liquidation or palette of some sort of just like beauty. No, don't do it. Why are you shaking your head? No.
No, most of that
stuff. We have to take your course.
Most of it ends up being returns.
Yeah.
And with beauty, use beauty products.
Not even use, but store, a shelf pulls, returns, all of it gets mixed up together.
Got it.
You're talking beauty products, risk. After you deal with returns and going through what's new and what's, it's a headache. And all the time looking up each and everything in a palette and listing it. The time invested isn't worth your return.
So another shift that we have done over the past year, it was right before COVID. So it wasn't because of the pandemic, but we switched to online arbitrage. So we literally do not leave the house. We source from home. It gets shipped to our home. We ship it out from our home. Our mailman picks it up from our house every day. So we run our entire business from home.
We're going around to Marshall's, TJ Maxx, and now it's
and then the pandemic
stores.
Happened, and a lot of people were forced into learning OA instead of RA. And
that's another thing with the kind of like we fell into it a year before.
So once again, great timing.
I know, right?
I'm seeing a trend.
Yeah, so
everything just kind of just happened for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, it's great for right now. I mean, you're in California and you guys are basically shut down.
100%. Everything's locked down.
We opened
down,
up
hospitals
for
full.
A few months, but then, majority of the time, everything's been closed.
Your opportunities are, they don't exist right that out in the real, out in the world.
It's
you
pretty
have
dead
to.
Outside.
Right. So, but you guys are not experts, but you have really good experience in it because you fell into it a year before. So that's great. I have leaned on online sourcing a little bit more since the pandemic, and it's been a learning curve, but I find that I enjoy it more and I know what I'm getting, and it's a little different than sourcing at a thrift store. I still love the thrill of the hunt, don't get me wrong. I still love that. But there's just something about sourcing online that intrigues me, and I like that.
Definitely. It's fun.
He is strictly online arbitrage, and then I, of course, when I'm doing my mom errands at Target or going to TJ Maxx and Marshall's, I'm always scanning through all of the clearance or popular items, and I'm still doing some RA, but a lot of it is online. And then another benefit is we can buy things in multiple online, and so that cuts down on our listing time because you just change the quantity as opposed to listing all of these different items.
Right, and doing single listings. So you guys predominantly eBay, Amazon, or what are your platforms look
eBay,
like?
eBay, Amazon, Posh, Mercari, you name
okay,
it.
Okay, so you are on those platforms as well.
Yeah, everything's cross-listed across all platforms.
And then we also do Go and StockX.
Nice.
And local. I sell a lot of my Costco goods through local platforms. Like, we don't do Facebook. I don't know why.
Just OfferUp.
I don't know why we don't do Facebook Marketplace, but we do OfferUp a lot.
I hate Facebook.
I don't know.
I don't love it.
Yeah, I've never done it.
My face to Instagram, so we're that.
Absolutely. So you're on all the platforms. Is there one that you or more than one that you prefer over others? Because some people that are listening may be new and maybe they want to get into eBay. Like, what advice would you give to someone who's hearing all these different platforms and they're like, I don't know what direction to go in?
Number one, pick one platform and master it. Yes. You can't be all over the place because number one, most people don't have, you know, that big of a budget. So you have, you know, you're trying to sell something clothing wise for Posh, you're trying to do a little for eBay, and you're all over the place. Mm-hmm. You got to master one thing before you get into another. And that's one of the biggest mistakes I see people doing. Trying to start Amazon and eBay at the same time. It's too hard. You need to master one before you do two.
eBay has always had our heart, but for some, Amazon might be easier for them to learn as opposed to eBay. But it depends on the individual, I think.
Yeah. A lot of people are scared of Amazon too. I mean, they hear, you know, all these stories, or they hear people saying that I tried it, I couldn't sell anything, gave up.
Sam, what do you think, and Misty, what do you think is the biggest myth about starting on Amazon? And what would you give as like your first two or three steps if somebody is interested in going that route?
For Amazon, I would say learn a rank chart. A rank chart's a group of numbers given to, you know, each category that kind of can tell you how often or how popular an item is. So I would suggest learning a rank chart and then learning a Keepa chart. Keepa will kind of tell you the velocity selling wise monthly of an item and its past history. That way you can know if, you know, you're buying something that's selling, or if you're buying something and, you know, the price last month was a lot lower than it is now, you know, it kind of helps you make that decision.
Okay.
And are these things that are easily available online, or like, how do you access these things?
We have a free rank chart on our website. Keepa chart, they could just download, you know, Keepa. I'm not sure what the subscription is on it, but it is a paid subscription. But the rank chart we have for free on our website, we update it every month.
Okay. And whoever's listening, all of their Sam and Misty's information will be in the show notes too. So you'll be able to click on those links to access all of this stuff as well. I feel like Amazon is just taking off in this direction and reselling. Like, I feel like everyone is jumping on the Amazon train. Like, Lori and I know someone personally who has made the switch completely to Amazon, was on Poshmark. Was April on eBay too?
I'm not sure.
I don't know. I
think it depends on lifestyle and you know, the type of sourcing that you like to do and whatnot. Because there are also people who started on Amazon and made the shift off. Yeah. And it depends on like where your experience is. There's somebody in our group who does just books for Amazon on our little YouTube group.
And that's a great way to start with books. It's one of the easiest ways, especially if you don't have that much capital. Books at thrift stores are, you know, sometimes four for a dollar on a certain day, or, you know, when they have these book sales, the $5 bags or $5 boxes. It's a great place for people to get started and learn the process.
That's nice to hear. And are you guys fulfilled by merchant? Do you fulfill all your orders? Are you sending things off to
everything to Amazon? The only time like we really do the fulfilled by merchant was like the past couple of months. And
Christmas.
It was really just because we couldn't get our stuff to Amazon in time because of, you know, Amazon warehouses closing down left and right because of COVID, shipment delays. So we kind of just handled it all pretty much from October through December.
And a part of last year, they were only accepting necessities.
About 3-4 months out of the year, you could only send.
There's only certain items.
Essentials.
Interesting. So how stressful was that for you guys to have to fulfill yourself for those few months?
Well, because we do it for eBay, it's the same. So if we do FBM, it's the same as if we were selling it on eBay. We just have to ship it on our own.
But shipping time-wise, it was night and day from October. So, I mean, probably like the 21st of December, the 20th of December with, you know, my youngest daughter, our son helping. I mean, it was a night and day thing.
Oh, my goodness.
We were getting out a couple hundred packages every day. I mean, what was the one on the 14th? I think we got out like 700 packages.
Wow.
I mean, it was insane.
Yeah, it was. Our whole house was full of packages. We were shipping from when we woke up till when we went to sleep with the help of our two children.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And did the shipping so everyone who is a reseller and listening, we all suffered from, you know, the shipping times being so crazy. I know for me on Poshmark, I still have things that are pending from the last week of November.
Yep.
And so how did that affect your Amazon business, or did it not affect it at all? Did you have returns? Like how did that work out for you guys?
I think the first week of January in all, we will have about $10,000 in returns.
There were a lot. Yeah. And there is
this doesn't fit. I don't want it. Came too late. But in, with Amazon, there's no about it. You have to take that return.
That's
right.
A downfall.
The customer is always right with Amazon.
Yeah, with Amazon. But with eBay, we do not accept returns whatsoever.
Unless it's something that's our fault, yes. You know, we'll accept it.
Right. If it's item not described, described or things like that. I have a little anxiety about returns as far as, you know, taking a step towards something like Amazon. But I mean, for people who are intimidated by it or whatever, it's just part of the business. The returns are part of it. So do you just factor that into like your projections?
No, not necessarily. You know, when I purchase something, I add an extra 2% when I'm calculating my purchase criteria, just to offset if I am promoting a listing on eBay and for returns. And I feel that adding that extra 2%, I don't really feel the returns or, you know, paying the promoted listings.
That's smart.
Yeah, that is smart. You're already incorporated in there.
What portion of your eBay listings do you promote?
All of them at 4%.
Interesting. Oh, wow, 4%.
Yeah.
Okay. Lori and I are really trying to get into eBay this year. Like, we were on it, but sporadic last year. It's like one of those things because we are predominantly Poshmark sellers. So, and it's so easy to list on Poshmark. Uh-huh. It is just, you list, I mean, besides the sharing aspect and all that, but it's just, it's not complicated to do, but it's just, it's another beast that you have to learn.
You need to get into and just kind of, I mean, I just got like the $25, whatever, thank you that eBay sent. So I've actually been on the platform for many years, but I've just been in and out with consistency. Mm-hmm. What else do I want to ask you about eBay? Tell me a little bit about Amazon, because you mentioned that when you got started, you realized that you were ungated in these amazing categories. And so did you just continue? I mean, you're still doing sportswear, so it sounds like that has been longstanding.
It's been the easiest for us to source. And, you know, Nike stuff to us is just, it sells itself. Like, I always have the saying, like, it's like crack in the 80s. I mean, everyone, it just sells itself.
Especially, right, I feel like streetwear has just, the last, like, 3 years,
because of everyone, you know, having that gym image,
leisure wear,
and
right?
Leisure wear,
athleisure, all of that.
Jeans. Mm-hmm. When women's leggings came back, I mean, it was a wrap for us. I mean, everything was Nike and Under Armour.
Left and right. Just printing money. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it sells itself.
And do you set the price on for Amazon?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You control what you sell for. You can increase, you know, from your phone, just, you know, couple taps.
When I sold on Amazon, it was when I was in college and it was for textbooks. Like, that's the only experience I have on selling for Amazon.
Hey, that's a money maker.
And that's, you know, what I was saying, you know, with people with a smaller budget looking to get started. I mean, some of those textbooks are, you know, $1, $2, even if they're $5, but textbooks are $50, $100, $200 each. Right. You just got to wait for, you know, that season, textbook season.
I know. But then I hear that colleges are now doing PDFs and not textbooks, but that doesn't really mean anything. I guess
they're still doing textbooks, but the kids, my kids buy them all used. And then, you know, they buy them, they sell them afterwards. Because we give my kids a budget for books and we say, you know, whatever you spend over this or whatever you save can go in your pocket. So they're like very, very, you know, thrifty when it comes to their textbooks, because they know they're going to pocket whatever money we give them, a certain budget, and then
they can definitely add up. I always buy the year before because there's not very many changes.
Smart.
From one year to the next, right?
That's really smart. I had a question and then I forgot it.
Something about eBay, I'm sure.
I don't remember.
Because I have so many questions about eBay, but I just need to do it. You know, like, that's really what it comes down to. I need to sit down and I just dedicate the time. And I know the platform, but I need to learn it even more. Like, I know that. Go ahead, Lori.
I'm sorry. How important do you think the optional fields are on eBay for your listings?
Any extra options you have make your listing more visible to people. If you add a specific color and, you know, someone's searching that color, I would always recommend taking the extra 10, 15 seconds to fill out as many fields as possible.
Even if it's in the description in the title.
Mm-hmm. So there's so many other fields in eBay that aren't, you know, if you can't fit it in Tidal, whether, for example, you know, we sell sneakers, I'm not going to put the Euro size in the Tidal, but someone who's on eBay who's searching by Euro size, if I have it in the field, it's going to pull up. Yeah, and if I don't,
there are going to be some customers that do use all of those filters to filter down that exact, you know, pair that they're looking for.
So would you say that eBay is pulling more from all the fields than it is from your description and stuff? Like Poshmark is pulling from description and fields. So would you say eBay's both, or are they looking at more?
eBay has the worst search engine ever. Misspellings don't pull up.
You have blue in front of Nike instead of after, it'll pull up some listings and not the other.
Some commas are having issues currently. Mm-hmm. They have an outdated search engine. So I would take advantage of both Tidal.
Which makes the optional fields more important because the search engine is outdated.
So it's funny you say that, because when I signed into my eBay, I remember, when, I don't know, they didn't update a few months ago and you had to put in all these new required fields, right? Well, when I signed into my eBay in the beginning of January, I now have 306 additional fields that I have to enter in, and they're all those optional fields that I do not enter in. So now I have 306 items that I need to go through
and
put in all the optional stuff.
Well, nice. The best part is when you go in and edit it, it refreshes the listing, which helps the algorithm, so...
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
It'll help each listing as you do it.
Yeah, just gonna do 10 a day so that I don't overwhelm myself.
Yes, small goals.
Yes, very small goals. And then
I tell people 3 listings a day.
That was my question.
It's 100 items a month.
Yeah, I've seen you say that before.
Yeah. Like I have all these items to list. No, don't make it so hard on yourself. Don't look at the big picture. Break it down into small, attainable daily goals.
But we also, with our group, we have weekly listing challenges where we pay out
usually just gift cards or gifts for, you know, our members that are sitting there. And, you know, we have a little competition. We'll start it, like we had one this started Friday 8 p.m. Whichever member lists the most by Sunday, we gave them like a $50 Amazon card. That's so we kind of try to make listing fun and do it with the members
everyone, you know, boosts each other up. It's really exciting, and you get, you know, more listings done. So
Well, it sounds like a nice community.
I'm excited to talk a little bit about your membership group and how people sign on, how many members you have, how often you meet.
So the members group we started beginning of last year, we were always just getting, you know, asked questions like how we're finding this, where we're getting this. So me and a friend put together a little group that we just started, you know, we're just playing around with it. We didn't think anything big of it. It started growing and growing, and we kind of realized that, you know, we're on to something here. Then I made the switch to what a lot of people aren't familiar with is called Gumroad about 6 months ago now. So Gumroad is a digital platform to sell digital content, whether it be like groups, guides, books, music. Decided to put the group on Gumroad. Allow the members to affiliate. So anyone that they referred, they got paid.
Okay.
It kind of just really took off. Every month we're adding about 100 members. We are currently 6 months in and at 700 members.
Wow.
Wow. That's amazing. These are all the members who are part of your incentive, you know, listing challenges and stuff like that.
Yeah. We also, it's actually a lead group. So we provide 10 to 20 leads, typically online Monday through Friday to them.
So it is 50% retail and arbitrage and 50% online arbitrage, and also 50% Amazon leads and 50% eBay leads. So it's the group is good for eBay or Amazon sellers. And then we run our group on an app called Discord. And so we are all using the same app. There's different channels. I think we have about 20 different channels.
Wow.
Just for leads, yeah.
Just for leads. We also have stocks. We have bots. We have monitors.
Releases, and then what else?
So 20 different channels depending on the interest of your members. So if I'm looking for sneakers, I'm on this channel.
Mm-hmm. There's probably about 50 channels in total, but 20 just for leads.
Yeah, we have general chat. We have success where everyone takes photos and they share their success for the week.
We have 10 plus monitors. What the monitors are their monitors for each individual store, whether it's Target, Home Depot, Amazon, any member who's looking for a particular item, we can put this item into our monitor. And the second that that website goes live with it, our group gets a notification.
Wow.
Wow.
So when you have all these members putting in these deals to each store, like the monitor is just consistently going.
So our phones are consistently like
they're always going.
You can filter which channels you prefer. And so you only get notifications for those items. But I mean, that's how easy it is to find inventory is things that are hot. Our leads will get a notification. You click on that notification. It goes to the store's website where the thing just came available in stock. And then you can just add to cart, gets delivered to your front door. You list it. It's that simple. I mean,
so crazy.
Did you purchase a lot of PS5s and Xboxes this season?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Karens, but we did.
People are angry at you.
That was nuts.
Yeah.
My husband got lucky and got one on Amazon. They said they were going to go live at noon. And he happened to just be working at his desk doing his job. And he logged in a little early and they went live at 11:45, not noon. And
That's awesome.
And got one. But of course, we didn't tell my son Rocco. We're like, you know, they sold out. I'm sorry.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so couldn't get it.
We tried.
Yeah. And then weeks later, my son Anthony was on a group for the PS5 because he wanted to get that. But so he was on some alert that I don't know what he signed up for, but he got the alert and he ended up getting it at Walmart. And then there was a buzz one day, Target, like the week before Christmas, as I'm sure you know, like came out with... all the Xboxes were back in stock.
Yeah, them and Best Buys, I think the same day.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so then like my phone was going crazy with all the moms like figuring it out. But I'm sure we were late to the game by then, but we had already had it. But then Rocco's like, Mom, they're available. We got to get one. And I had to play dumb because we already had one. But yeah, it's very exciting. Like when you get those notifications, it's pretty exciting. And Xbox was insane this year.
Yes.
Yeah, it really was. That and the PlayStation. They were really, really big.
This is stuff that my husband wants to get into. Like, I like the clothing and the accessories and the handbags and all that kind of stuff. And he wants to get into, like, the Amazon world. Like, this is what he wants to get into. The sitting on the computer, find the items are, you know, they're dropping. He adds it to cart. They come to the house. Like, that's what he wants to do. That's his goal.
Yeah.
So he was very excited that I was talking to you guys tonight. Very excited.
Oh, I bet. Cool. What is so exciting is the limited releases. So we will have, you know, multiple laptops, each of us and our phone, our credit card information on there, you know, and you just have to be super quick and your adrenaline is running and
it's fun.
It's a lot of fun. And this is our job. Like it's crazy.
That's super fun. Did you guys buy stuff for the Beyonce drop, the Ivy Park drop?
No, only because the first.
We did last, her first time release and it sat.
Really?
The first release, we stayed away from the second release.
Yeah, so those are the instances where, like, you anticipate and you get excited. Or what about, like, Post Malone and Crocs? You must buy them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah.
Right? Ah, fun. That's see, this
yeah.
is
But,
fun.
Yeah, the Beyonce it we is. Stayed yeah. away from.
Okay.
And then we started seeing, I mean, even after, like, the first release, everything ended up being at Marshall's and TJ Maxx. So we know it just didn't do good in-store either.
Well, I think that's important to note too, because right now the yellow tag sale is going on, right, with TJ Maxx and Marshalls. And I think it's important for people that are listening to remember that sometimes those are items that have sat in the retail store and they didn't move and they didn't do
telling
well.
You a story. Yeah.
Right.
Or and if you just see two or three markdowns on an item, that's telling you something.
Right. If you're finding one or two pieces of the same item, maybe okay to get, but when you're finding 10 of the same thing in every size.
Every store, yeah.
Right. That's typically
it's a reasoning.
You have to put the brakes on and say, well, is this really worth it for me to get? Because
I think I bought a few Ivy Park pieces that were like $3, like sports bras. on Yellow Tag. And
yeah, at those prices, you know, they make sense, but at, you know, MSRP, no, thank you.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a fan of going to like check out the Yellow Tag stuff at Marshalls and TJ Maxx, but then I'm always hesitant because I'm always afraid that I'm going to sit on these things because so many other resellers go out there and get them as well. I don't know. I have a hard time. Like I want things to move. I have like a very regimented schedule that I have. I like items to move within like 60 to 90 days. I want them to move out of my space because everything is in my home.
Yes.
So I don't like to keep anything. I'm not in the business of storing things. I want them to move. So when I go the retail arbitrage route, I always get a little nervous because I don't know how quickly it's going to move. Is it going to sit? Are people going to want this? Is it still going to be relevant in like a month, you know? But that's right. The gamble that you take when you try right.
this. We all had the crystal ball, you know?
Yeah right?
Definitely.
So with the Yellow Tags, what we do is we do sourcing trips, and because we are ungated with Amazon and Under Armour, that's pretty much what we focus on, shoes and athletic apparel that we will sell on Amazon, because majority of the resellers cannot sell those brands on Amazon. And so we'll just scan through everything in that store, the Yellow Tags. Nike, Under Armour.
When she says road trip, like we will fill up an SUV, come back, leave again, and we'll do a good 2 weeks out of it.
Yeah,
and then two weeks later, we'll go pick up all the leftover Yellow Tags that have been marked down and do it again.
Because they will continuously mark these Yellow Tags
down. Every week they're going down 15%.
So how far are you traveling when you're doing this?
So we do, San Diego is a huge county. So we'll do San Diego, swing back around home to empty the SUV, and then we'll do Inland Empire and Palm Springs. Okay. So it's a couple days when we do the Palm Springs one, and we'll go all the way to Palm Springs, hitting every Marshall, CJ Maxx. What is the other store?
Ross.
Yeah.
Ross's we do, but those are typically...
And Burlington. Burlington is really good for shoes. So we always go to Burlington's to look at their sneakers. Mm-hmm. And then we stay and have like a little relaxing weekend in Palm Springs.
Stay at a resort for the weekend and then come back on the day and hit the
stores. That's nice.
Yes. Yeah, it's a lot of...
Have you ever had an issue with any of the retail locations buying such large quantities?
No.
They're happy
Targets do not like resellers. So we've had to warn our group members, you know, when you are going into these Targets and getting these BOLOs that we share with you. Yeah,
be incognito.
Yes, don't be a sore thumb sticking out, you know, just fill up your cart, go to self-checkout, you know, because you don't want to alert them that you're a reseller. And
they really frown down on it. And the customer service, there's a sign talking about resellers. Just in December, they sent out an email to, you know, corporate and all managers to put like a little sign in front of registers saying, this is what you're looking out for. These are limited.
Yes, I just had actually an incident November, I think it was one of our BOLOs that we were out searching for. And I filled up my cart with this BOLO several stores that day, several Targets. But I just arrived at one Target and there was somebody in the front and told me it's limit two. So yeah. I had to empty my entire cart. And it was somebody, it wasn't even at the checkout. It was as I was, you know, just walking down the aisle and they noticed it in my cart. So
it's really challenging. I worked at American Girl for almost on and off for like 10 years, like 8 years total. But we knew our resellers and we didn't love them, you know, and they would show up and I don't know. And there was something about that. It was a toy for a kid. And I still struggle with this today because we had that extra Xbox at Christmas. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, we could flip the, I mean, I'm a reseller, you know, but sometimes it does weigh on my conscience. I have to be honest with certain toys or like, you know, what about that working mom who like couldn't get out today to buy this toy? And I'm here, I work from home and I clear the shelf. I mean, I do it. So like, I'm not judging at all. I'm just saying sometimes I have a harder time morally with like the toys and stuff like that. You know, because we knew at American Girl, there were people who, you know, it's a luxury toy and people would save their money and then they'd come in for that one item and it would be gone. And then the reseller would have just walked out with 10 of them. So we would be like different things we would put a different number on as far as limitations go.
Yeah. I completely understand. And I was feeling that way over Christmas because there was one particular BOLO from our group that was $20 at Target's It was for a small child, like an infant, and we purchased them all for $20 and we're selling them for $120 and you couldn't find them anywhere. Well, we would find them because we got that alert on our phone from West Coast Deals. But I was thinking that, like, these poor moms, like this baby, even my brother tried to contact me, you know,
do you know where we can get them?
It's very popular toy for the small children. And we, you know, they couldn't find them anywhere. So I know what you're talking about and where you're coming from.
But then there's the flip side. Like I did supply and demand.
It's simple.
Huh?
I used to have that heart too. And then I realized it's simple supply and demand.
It's true with certain things.
I don't know. I still struggle with it. And I say that I'm sitting on an American Girl doll, limited edition, like Nutcracker doll that I bought that I paid $250 for and is selling on average for between $650 and $800. And
oh, I can believe that.
I don't have the heart to list it yet. It's the first limited edition doll, like with Swarovski crystals. And I mean, I know that, like, I know that brand very well. And I bought two and I kept one and I have one and I just haven't had the heart to list it. I'm going to list it. But it makes me pause, I guess, is all. Yeah. So I think it's like, it's a different beast than saying, oh, I'm saving something from a landfill. You know what I mean?
It's a
little bit different, but it's still really fun and it's still a hustle and it's still really hard work. And I respect it. I do.
Just to talk about the flip side of what we were just saying about the Target employees being on the lookout for resellers. When I worked at Walgreens for 14 years. I was one of the marketing beauty advisors. So I'd go in, I'd set up all the beauty departments on the Walgreens, and I helped do all that kind of stuff and the having the items in different planograms. So we would get fired if they ever found out that we purchased an item on clearance and then tried to flip it.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, if you're an employee, it's different. We were banned from eBay.
Buying it all, right?
Yep, they would look and see if we had eBay accounts, if we were on Craigslist selling things.
Wow.
If we used coupons and were doubling coupons, so there were coupons that print the register, and then there'd be manufacturer coupons. And if we were caught doing that on a clearance or sale item, you would get flagged and you could lose your job. So,
We definitely fired people for reselling at our store. We used to have employee sales and we would sell the dolls for $15, but they were marked like visual department.
Yeah.
And you know, there were certain items that were only at the employee sale because they were now discontinued. So we had to pull them off the floor, but that made them go up in value. And then we were getting them for the price. And then if people were caught, you know, our loss prevention department bagged people all the time. So I obviously never sold anything while I was working there, but it was tempting. And, you know,
100%.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. So
it was definitely tempting. Definitely tempting. And then when I stopped working there, I took full advantage of it. And that's when I started getting into eBay and I would sell makeup and stuff on eBay. And then I just stopped doing it altogether. And then I got back into it a few years ago. But yeah. So, I mean, I get it when you're an employee, but I always struggle with that when businesses get so upset when they see resellers come in, they're clearing out the inventory. It's like, but do you want to keep it? I'm confused.
Yeah.
What do you
want? I can understand with a store like Target, because a lot of those, you know, popular items, they're not really making money on. They sell them just to get you into the store
and
you buy something else.
Sure.
Yeah.
So some of those items even take a loss on.
Yeah, and it's the same with so in the pharmacy world, cigarettes or in lottery, you don't make money on any of that stuff. It's a convenience for your customer that's coming in.
Yep.
You know, they might buy something else while they're in the store.
Hoping to get a soda out of it or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Gift cards work the same thing, so all of that. But yeah, so circle back around here. where do you guys see reselling going in the next 5 years, 10 years, year, you know, where do you see it going? Because you're heavily involved.
Yeah, it's endless. The potential is endless. Especially seeing so many people interested in it. Then, you know, you start seeing reality shows on like Netflix, like what's that, Slobby's World?
I binged that show when it came out.
The storage wars. Start seeing people buying their reselling on eBay, Girl Boss on, you know, Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
So it's endless possibility. What's the new sneaker one? Sneakerheads?
I don't remember. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's called Sneakerheads.
Right now.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't even know there was a sneaker one that was out.
Mm-hmm. It's new. I haven't watched it yet. I think it's like a month old.
Huh.
Wow.
Yeah. I feel like there's so many possibilities in reselling. And some people always say, well, it's getting saturated. There's a lot of people. And I think
They've been saying that for 15 years.
Right. And I don't think you'll ever, like, maybe it feels more saturated because more people are doing it, but everyone ends up finding their groove and doing different things and selling different things and going in different avenues, and these new apps that are popping up left and right that you can sell on. Like, the opportunities are endless, really. I mean, you can stop selling things yourself and just become a supplier for people, and you house all this stuff and then you're sending it out to them and they pay the price for the good. You know, there's so many options when it comes to reselling. It's just not the, it's not always the typical get the item at thrift store, take a picture of it, store it in your house, ship it out. Like, there's so much that goes into it.
Yes, there's some people that focus specifically on books or
cards.
Specifically on sports cards,
we
which
have
is
a
huge.
13-year-old in our group. What did he make his first month? 800. I think he made $800 flipping cards his first month, and the kid was 13 years old.
It was so exciting, and he knew. Like, he knew. Was it a LeBron card?
Yeah,
he knew to hold on to it because they were going to win the championship.
He's like,
I asked him
if he was going to sell it, and he said, "You know what? You know, I want to wait a month because I think the Lakers are going to win the championship." And just, you know, for a 13-year-old to have a mentality thinking ahead of value of something like that, it blew me away.
And there's something to be said about that generation, right, Lori? I mean, Lori's got young kids. I mean, they're teenagers, but there's something to be said about that generation, even the way they value thrifted items, just everything about it. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's different.
I love to see it. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, they have that hustle on them. We, in our Zoom call last week, was it, where the 19-year-old, he, remember the 19-year-old who did 50K?
Oh,
50,000. Yeah. I don't remember. Not. I don't know. It was a 19-year-old in our group, but he did over the holiday. So I think it was November and December. His ending numbers was 50,000.
That's 18 years old.
He's 19. So
what is he selling?
Just different.
Everything.
Whatever he can get.
Yeah.
That's.
But
awesome.
He just started Amazon and just picked it up. Learn to read charts to understand. I mean, it's just a numbers game. If you learn the numbers and what's working, you can run with it. And he had money, so that definitely helps. I mean, capital is, it's huge.
That was a question I had. So I know you mentioned if you're just getting started or you're on a limited budget, like books are a great place to start. You were like shaking your head when we were talking about liquidation. I'm curious, like, what would you suggest to somebody who has like money to spend on, say, a palette, but they may not want to go the palette route or whatever. What would you recommend for someone who has the money? What would be the first thing if not books?
With money? That's a tough one.
You have a lot of possibilities, I guess, if you
You know what? With money, it's up to you. It's what you're going to enjoy. Without money, it's a whole different story and there's lots of options. But with money, I mean, it's kind of whatever it is you want to do.
Yeah,
and it's only because the money's available to you.
I feel like we see people go the palette route, right? Like, a lot of our friends have gone down the palette route and stuff. And Lori and I have talked about this. We don't really know if palettes is something that we want to do. It's a different animal.
It really depends on what kind of palettes.
If
there's store returns versus shelf pulls versus are you able to see a manifest of detailed items of it, know exactly where it came from. There's so much that goes into palettes.
It could be a gamble.
Yeah.
Then you're stuck with a palette full of items that you can't sell.
Because we've heard so many horror stories with people buying Amazon return palettes. And I mean, I've seen people lose lots of money like over and over and over again.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's scary.
And discouraging too.
Yeah, definitely.
Very discouraging. So before we go, I definitely want you guys to give yourself a little plug. If people want to find you on social media, your website, where can they go? Where can they find you?
Instagram. Sure. She is.
I'm West_Coast_Gems with a Z.
And I'm West_Coast_Goods with a Z. And then the website is westcoastdeals.com.
Perfect.
And all of those websites are also, if you follow us on Instagram, you can go into our bio everything is linked in there. We also have guides on how, if they do Amazon, how to get ungated in Starbucks or Toys. We will soon have Nike and Under Armour ungating, which is going to be huge for 2021. So those will all be in the bio of our Instagram.
Okay. Perfect.
I know we're like signing off here, but the ungating thing was a question that I had. So for ungating, is it a matter of how long you're on the platform or what you sell in volume or your reviews or rankings? Like how does it go?
A little bit of everything, honestly. At first it's, you know, proving yourself. It's bringing your metrics to a certain, you know, point where Amazon's, you know, seeing that you're fulfilling orders in time. You don't just have to, you know, wait for it to come natural. You can reach out to the manufacturer. I mean, if you have a letter from the manufacturer saying you're allowed to sell it, you submit it to Amazon, they'll allow you to sell it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Interesting.
All right. Interesting. That was one of the questions I've forgotten.
And I'm sure we'll think of more once we get off too, because it's just
part of things. Well, we do answer all of our DMs. So you're more than welcome, or whoever's listening, you're more than welcome to send us any questions you have. And we do personally respond to each one of our messages.
That's impressive.
Yes. That's good to know.
We know that's how we learned is, you know, asking questions and watching videos and researching online. So we want to give back because that's how we got to where we are by learning from others that were doing the same thing.
And I'd rather save someone from making a costly mistake if it's information I know that can save them that money. Because sometimes, you know, a mistake can cost you $100. Yes, it's a $100 lesson now, but it's still $100.
Right. Right. And if you don't have a lot of capital to work with, that can make a big difference in your business.
It could be huge. Yeah.
Well, your story is really fascinating. You guys are an inspiration and this was such a fun hour. I really enjoyed talking with you both. And thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. I think our listeners are going to love this.
Yeah. I mean, I know we loved it.
Thanks for having us.
Yes. Well, thank you for having us and nice to meet you both.
It was nice to meet you both. Thank you so much for staying
of course.
Here and chatting.
Bye. With
you. Thank you. Bye. Hey, the thrifters, it's Daniela, and today we are going to talk about shapeandfoster.com. So Shape and Foster is a lifestyle development app that provides monthly actionable insight from 6 experts in mental health, financial planning, nutrition, fitness, yoga, and a life coach. It is a one-stop shop for self-improvement. The app provides a proactive and informed approach to improving your mental well-being by enabling practices and habits to be built. Lifestyle development is about enhancing your quality of life by improving awareness, identity, and potential. One community of actionable insight. Learn from 6 pillars essential to a healthy heart and healthy mind, and in one unique app. Visit www.shapeandfoster.com for your free 14-day trial. Now let's get back to the episode.